Hi, everyone. I'm Megan, and welcome to Word Crash, the game show where questionable plots compete for your vote to win a place in the Word Crash Hall of Infamy. First, let's meet our contestants. She loves robots, creating text-based RPGs, and a good horror story, an award-winning screenwriter, and digital banshee for the band Electric Alice. Please welcome Alice Wells.
Hi, everybody.
Next, he's a writer, actor, lyricist who's published comic books and studied magic. From Portland, Oregon, please welcome Jamie Maxisak.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be here.
Welcome, welcome, Jamie. Well, nothing left to do but get to it. Let's play Word Crash. Watch out. This is what happens when worlds collide. It's time for Character Mash. Take two characters and mash their stories together. Alice, what do you have for us today?
I have Alice from Brady Bunch meets Alice in Wonderland. Hilarity ensues when Sam the Butcher delivers a weird package of meat to Alice that reads, "Eat me," and it accidentally gets mixed into this week's meatloaf.
Ooh, fantastic, fantastic. This is a great mashup. Wait. But you're Alice, so you have an Alice in Wonderland and Alice from the Brady Bunch. This is going to get very confusing, woman. For those people who haven't actually ever watched an episode of The Brady Bunch, can you describe the character Alice from The Brady Bunch for me?
Alice is comic relief in the Brady Bunch show. She is the maid to the Brady Bunch family, a man and woman that had been married before. You know, one had three boys, one had three girls, and somehow this fellow met this lady, and they knew it was much more than a hunch, and that's how this crew became the Brady Bunch. And Alice came with them, and she had a boyfriend named Sam the Butcher. And so I thought it would be hilarious to mash Alice in Wonderland up with Alice the Maid.
What happens to everyone when they eat this meatloaf? What is the first effect?
They shrink and they go down the rabbit hole. Who knows what can happen after that?
The entire Brady Bunch clan shrinks. This isn't going to be fun if the whole family's just together. So we need to separate them. We need to split the party.
Well, I think the parents are stolen by the Queen of Hearts, and the children have to perform one of their Brady Bunch family songs that they do in order to distract the Queen to rescue their parents.
That's fantastic. We need them to meet some other people besides just the Queen. Who else could they meet?
Well, the Caterpillar. Who else?
The Caterpillar. Who's going to be best friends with the Caterpillar?
Marsha.
Marsha is going to be best friends with the Caterpillar. I've seen the scene where Alice, right, still dressed in her maid's uniform, right? Not French maid for anyone out there. It wasn't a French maid. You go look her up. It was very demure.
The dress is almost like Alice's maid's outfit, actually.
It is, actually.
Yeah. It's blue with the white little apron thing over it. Yep, that's hilarious.
Okay, so Alice finds the first child. We've decided that it is Marsha, and she's hanging out with the Caterpillar. Is she liking it?
She liking it.
Oh, she's eating that mushroom. She's eating that mushroom.
She's eating that mushroom?
Oh, yeah.
What does Alice have to do to get Marsha to leave the Caterpillar?
Marsha would be smoking from the hookah. So I would think that Alice would have to maybe somehow throw a net over the Caterpillar to distract them so she could steal Marsha away.
Ooh, wrap them up like a cocoon. Yeah.
I was thinking butterfly net, but I like the wrap up cocoon.
She uses her Alice powers to knit a cocoon and throws it over the Caterpillar, and then she can steal Marsha away, who's having just too fun of a time and doesn't need her parents anymore. Alice is escaping with this Marsha, who's still high as f- I'm sorry, still tripping balls. No, I'm sorry. Still quite intoxicated. Yeah. Who do they find next? Jamie, who do they find next?
Oh, Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Tweedledee and Tweedledum. And who's hanging out with Tweedledee and Tweedledum?
Oh, Greg.
Greg.
I can see him kind of banging the heads together. Boom.
What does Alice have to do to get Greg to come along?
I think Alice has to promise him that at the end, everybody will watch him do his concert because he always wanted to be a rock star. I think Alice can convince him that at the end, he'll get to perform for the queen, and that's what he wants, so he'll come along pretty willingly.
But Greg, there's a queen. You could perform for a queen. Wouldn't you want to perform for a queen? Oh, yeah. That sounds great. Bye, guys. You know, and that's it. And Marcia's just like, yep. Whoa, there are six of you. Who's next?
I would go with Bobby and Cindy, and they meet the Mad Hatter. I think Bobby and Cindy would drive them so crazy that they go back to being normal. And then just be like, I'm off to go sell hats at my haberdashery. And he would just leave because he would just get so tired of them doing what they do. Because Cindy, you know, was always the tattletale and Bobby was always the, like, the hall monitor and stuff. So I think they would just badger the poor Mad Hatter until he went straight and had to leave.
They out crazy the Mad Hatter. I love it. I love it. So when Alice gets there, he's like, take these kids, please.
He's drove exactly. Straight.
Yeah, they're driving me crazy. They're driving me uncrazy. That's what it would be.
They're driving me uncrazy. They're driving. I'm now uncrazy. Can you see how uncrazy I am? I'm going to go back to my haberdashery. That would
love
be
it. Love it.
Yep.
Do you know why the term Mad as a Hatter came about?
Probably because a haberdasher got sick and tired of making quarter and half sizes until they went crazy.
Actually, it's because mercury was used in the forming of hats. And so basically they were getting mercury poisoning and they'd go nuts. And it was just something that happened to hatters. Yeah. So Mad as a Hatter.
That is cool.
Anyway, sorry. There's no time for education here. You got Bobby and Cindy, the youngest, who are having so much fun, and now they got to go because they're being told to go. They're not happy at all. Who's next?
Jan. Jan would meet the Cheshire Cat.
Are we going to get a scene of Jan with an unnaturally large smile?
Yes. And then, of course, Jan would, you know, just try to figure out what's going on because she, you know, claims to be the smart one of the group. Mm-hmm. So she would be all over... You know, okay, this is not really just floating here. It's attached to something we just can't see. And she would way overthink the whole thing. And then, of course, he'd show himself and she'd scream her head off.
Oh, yes, she did do that scream. She was really good at that scream.
She nailed it every time.
Yeah. We've had Cindy and Bobby conquer the Mad Hatter. We've had Marcia embrace the hookah.
And the mushrooms.
And the mushrooms.
So the last one would be Peter. And he would meet... The White Rabbit, Peter, he didn't really have much going on, but I think his whole thing was just being stuck in the middle and being stuck between being a boy and a man. He would probably want to sit down and talk to the rabbit about time and how time passed, you know, because the rabbit was always like, I'm late, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. So that's how I would see Peter is talking to the White Rabbits. Maybe what happens is the rest of the gang comes along and they steal the White Rabbit's clock and Peter takes it and runs off thinking that, you know, maybe it will help him move into adulthood faster.
And
they could have a spinoff, Peter and the Rabbit, or just call it Peter Rabbit for short.
See, every time we do this show, people are coming out with entire cinematic universes. This naturally happens. We've got all the arc series, right, in the past shows. Now we're getting into the Rabbitverse.
Rabbit.
Yep.
I'd love to see a heart-to-heart talk between Peter and the Rabbit. Mr. Rabbit, you know, have you thought about time? You know, you're always in a rush to get places, and if you rush too long to get there, you're not going to enjoy the time you have. And the rabbit's like, whoa.
And then Marcia comes in. Whoa.
Yes. Whoa. That whole stuck between boyhood and manhood. But you're rushing forever, and maybe it's not okay to rush. Maybe it's okay to enjoy being a kid, because... You know, he looks at this rabbit that's rushing everyone, doesn't have a life besides rushing. The White Rabbit has got to be the one that tells them how to get to the queen, right?
Little chase happens, in some of the old movies where somebody be chasing somebody one way and then it goes crazy and then they're chasing the other person the other way.
You mean Scooby-Doo?
So
the yes, Scooby-Doo doors Scooby- thing?
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
A hilarity ensues with, you know, them chasing the rabbit and the watch, and maybe then the rabbit's chasing them, or they go back to chasing the rabbit and then somehow, you know, end up into Queen's chambers, and Mike and Carol Brady are tied up in a bunch of red rose vines, and the kids, you know, they come in and the Queen yells for her guard, the knaves, to come in and grab them and wants to cut off their heads, and then they're like, no, we'll perform for you. They start performing.
Wait, I'm going to stop you right there. Which song okay. are they going to perform?
The Keep On, Keep On.
Okay.
Sunshine Day.
Sunshine yeah. Day.
And the knaves and the Queen start dancing. The White Rabbit decides to help them out and unties the parent. When they do the ending number, they all dance off stage, all escape. And the White Rabbit joins them and then sits in a cage on Peter's dresser.
And tarts for everyone.
Alice would be back in the kitchen making tarts. End scene.
It's time for Secret Sauce, where our authors share a technique or strategy they use to keep the creative juices flowing. Jamie, what tip or technique do you have for us today?
It is music. I actually write soundtracks to everything I work on.
That's amazing. What kind of music do you use for these? Is it stuff that you like or is it stuff you think is thematically appropriate?
Both. I have to like it, but it also has to fit. So like, for example, I'm working on a TV show called Teen Arthur, and it's actually set in the 80s in a high school in Pennsylvania, of all places. And so the music for that is obviously 80s music. And then another project I'm working on is called the Broken Trilogy. Broken, Shattered, and then Unbroken. And for that, it's a whole variety. It's all over the place. There's instrumental, there's rock, a lot of alternative. So it's kind of all over the place on that one.
Are you listening to these as you're actually writing stuff or as you're imagining or creating?
No, I mean, I'll get inspired by a song. Like, oh, that's really cool. And then I'll just see this vision of where that fits in one of the projects. And then so I've got playlists for all my projects and I'll just throw it in the proper playlist. And then later I'll put it into where it belongs in this, you know, in the series as it goes through.
Have you ever used a single song to inspire a complete work?
In a book, I have.
So you just have these playing in the background?
Yeah. It really helps me watch the characters develop. A lot of the mood and the feeling that I get that fits in. Because, like I said, I pick a song that to me is going to fit. But then as I'm listening to it, there's just other aspects that I just didn't even think about that speak to me through there. And then it just makes that scene just even more fantastic than it already hopefully was.
What song appears in almost every one of your playlists?
I think We Are the Champions is on two. It's on both the Broken Trilogy and Teen Arthur because it's an 80s song.
What song have you always wanted to put in a playlist but has never actually been appropriate?
It's a Doors song, Riders of the Sky, that one.
Riders on the Storm?
Storm, thank you. Yeah, Riders on the Storm. Yeah, that speaks to me on many levels and that'll show up somewhere. Big Doors fan, so.
Oh, fantastic. Brand new one for me. I have never heard of anything like this. Pretty certain that if I were to use music, it would have to not have words in it because I can only do one word thing in my brain at a time. I can be writing, I can be talking, or I can be listening. Very rarely can I do all three simultaneously. So I think it's fascinating that you can listen and be involved in that and engrossed in that and still produce language.
Do you want to hear one of my favorite new songs that has worked its way into a project?
Sure.
It's ironically one that Alice whispered in my ear. Alice, do you remember what song that is?
It is going to be Mad Hatter by Melanie Martinez.
And what's my favorite line?
The thing about being crazy, all the best people are.
I'll be the Mad Hatter. Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah.
So Alice, what tip or technique do you have to share with our listeners?
I do use music, except for I don't use soundtracks. I use the music that I like to dance to because above anything else that I do, including screenwriting, dancing is my ultimate passion. I work at a standing desk all day and I listen to music all day. And whenever the mood strikes me, it doesn't matter what I'm in the middle of, I will start dancing in my office. And while I'm dancing, I'm still always creating in my mind. So I sometimes work out issues or will be dancing and all of a sudden will think of a new idea. For me, one, it would be do something else creative while you're trying to write so that you can have as many creative things coming into you while you're doing it, if that works for you. It doesn't work for everybody. The other thing I would say is the best way to be a great screenwriter is don't write screenplays. Write something else first. I'm a professional technical writer that got very, very good at copy editing. Things had to be very precise. You got to slice words, cut pages, make sure there's a lot of white space on a page. I took all of my years of writing business and technical stuff, and even, I'll dare say, writing tweets, because you have a limited amount of space.
Mm-hmm.
Start with that. Write nothing but one pagers, or write an eight pager and cut a page, do several versions and cut a page each time telling the same story. And I've done that before. I took eight page screenplay and I wrote four other versions all the way down to a six page version. Actually, no, 5.5 pages. And I think I actually had more character development in the 5.5 pages than I did in the eight. I'd also like to say that I just started writing this year. And I'm now a 15-time international award winner, including that eight-page short that I wrote. Some people would be like, you've got to go to film school. You've got to watch so much stuff. You've got to read. You read other people's scripts. You've got to do this and you've got to do that. My advice is don't pigeonhole yourself into how everybody else does it. If outlining and character development and writing bios and writing log lines prevents you from getting your story out, don't do it. Just write. Let it come out naturally. I'm a stream of consciousness writer. I can tell you this is exactly what I'm going to write, and 5 minutes later, it will be not what I just told you, but it will be, end up being better. And yeah, so that's how I write.
Well, I write in a very similar manner. I used to describe myself as stream of consciousness. Other people have come to me and said, well, it's too organized for that. And I was like, okay, maybe, I guess. And so they doubted me. But then some other writers came along, actually on this show, and told me that there are two types of writers. There are pantsers and there are planners. Right? Planners need everything up front. They know what's going to happen. They have all their chapters mapped out. They have everything together. And then it's just putting in the prose. Right? It's just putting in the prose. They fill out their chapters and they're done. They're a planner. And then there's me, who's more like a pantser. I'm just going to wing it. I think the pantser thing really flows directly into your stream of consciousness. You're going to get there. You're going to do it. The important thing is to not judge yourself. If you judge yourself, you'll never get anything done. And that you totally came back to that again with just do it. Another fantastic point you made was take that thing that's 8 pages and cut it down to, you know, 5.5 pages or something like that. Tighten it up. This quote has been everywhere and has been attributed to so many people online that I'm certain someone in the comments will tell me who the real author of this quote was. But I've heard it attributed to everyone from Mark Twain to Albert Einstein. And it's, I would have written you a shorter letter, but I didn't have the time.
I literally just saw somebody post that on Twitter the other day. That's so hilarious. Yeah.
That is determination, let me tell you, because, you know, I've pulled things out of my books, whole chapters sometimes, but I've never decided that, well, the page count's too high. I got to do it in half that amount of page count. That's a challenge.
Thank you. I viewed it more from a filmmaker producer eye rather than a screenwriter eye. How do I tell the same story in less shots, that costs less money, that has less danger to the cast and crew? And so when I kept that in mind, then, but still keeping the gist of the story, you know, I knew I had it. So that would be my other tip to people, is write something short and make it shorter until you can say the same story in the least amount of words.
And what I did with the Broken Trilogy is I went the complete other direction. Instead of just writing one, I ended up writing a trilogy. So I went completely opposite from what you suggested, but I like what you said.
I like what you said too. I had a trilogy planned for plot lines. I got halfway through in the first book and published it. At that estimation, I had 5 more books to go.
Yay!
The thing was, it was only the first of 3 trilogies. So now it's, I don't think I'll ever live to write them all. Strap in and get ready for the jump to light speed. It's time for In Space. In this game, we ask our contestants to add In Space to the end of any book or movie and tell us what the new plot is. Jamie, what story are you launching into space today?
So, when I heard that, I thought, pigs in space! But then I thought, well, wait a minute. Sci-fi, so let's make it a little more seriously fun and call it Pig in Space. And it can star Nicolas Cage as a spaceman going into the outer universe with his best friend, who's a pig. And everywhere he goes, everybody wants to take his pig because they've never seen a pig. What is this cool creature? I want one. And all these different aliens are all over this pig. But he's like, no, it's my pig. And yeah, so there it is.
Okay. All right. That's high concept. We definitely have high concept here. Where is the first place that Nicolas Cage and his pig, by the way, does this pig have a name?
Joe Pig.
So Nicolas Cage and Joe Pig, where's the first place they go? Or who's the first person they meet?
Mars. And that's where all the cool people are. All the Martians. They're the hipsters of the universe.
Martians are the hipsters of the universe. Good to
T-shirts
know.
T-shirts and cups available soon.
I love it. Alice, can we make that happen? I hear you're getting some merch store together or something. We can make Martians are the hipsters of the galaxy T-shirts.
I need to make that happen. I do have a person that is doing merch and shirts and sweatshirts for people I know. So, yep. Who knows what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks? I could have tons of fun things.
We're really getting it together here. We're merchandising this, and we've only passed like the second scene. If Martians are the hipsters of the universe, what's their world like? Are we talking combinations of Amish people running around being hipsters, right? Weaving their own thread in line at aboard the space shuttles? Are we talking retrofuturist Jetsons people running around in little cars going?
Oh yeah. Far more Jetsons, because they're the ones that are happening. That's where all the action is. You know, you go to Mars not for vacation but for the fun.
Alice, on this Martian planet, who wants to do what to poor Joe Pig?
There's probably the bad hipster dude on Mars, and maybe he has read a book that someone from Earth left about pork barbecue.
Oof. Oof. We're getting into the rough stuff right off the bat. Right off the bat. Time for barbecue. What's this doofus's plan?
He's going to get Nick Cage drunk on green Martian beer. It'll do the opposite to him because he's Nick Cage. So instead of getting him drunk, it actually gives him like superpowers. And he first passes out, but when he wakes up, he's got superpowers and he's got to go rescue the pig. And if you've seen any of Nick Cage's most recent movies, he's gone like extra Nick Cage. So he's definitely gonna come after these people, these aliens. Well, technically he'd be the alien. So he's going to go after the Martians. Oh, and save his pig.
Okay, Jamie, Nicolas Cage saves Joe Pig. Where's the next place they're going to visit?
Jupiter.
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 And what are the Jupiterians like?
Jupiterians, they are not hipsters, but they are really, really cool in a very slow and methodical way. They think the pig is their new god.
Ooh.
They worship the pig.
It's a good one. They want the pig to stay because their god is here. Oh, oh, worship the pig. Oh.
We're not worthy.
We're not worthy. Is there anything Nick Cage can do to convince them that he's not their god?
I don't know, because the pig's really digging it. The pig loves Nick, but man, being a god? Come on, you know? They're worshiping me. I love this. No, I don't want to go back home. I'm happy here. I'm a pig in my element.
See, I think the pig would be happy about that until he found out that part of being the god and lasting forever is being dipped in gold and being turned into a statue so that they can worship at the altar, the feet of the golden pig. The pig will be on his way to be dipped in gold, and Nick's gonna come in, rescue him just in time, and then the pig will give him lots of piggy kisses and wag his little piggy tail and realize that he wants to stay with Nick instead.
For the third and final planet, can we go way out there? Not Jupiter, not Pluto, not the mysterious ninth planet that people think may or may not exist.
Do they go to the sun?
The sun.
Oh, that'd be hot.
Okay. Okay, they could go to the... So, now you gotta tell us, Jamie, who lives on the sun?
Saul. Saul lives on the sun. By himself.
It's just Saul.
Just Saul. You better call Saul.
Okay. They've escaped godhood. They've run back to the center of the solar system. Here they are talking to Saul. What's it like being on the sun?
Surprisingly, it's actually kind of cool where they're at. That's the one spot of the universe inside the sun is actually cool.
Interesting. And what kind of guy is Saul? Or woman? Is Saul a guy or a girl?
He's neither. He's both.
So what kind of person is Saul?
They're a very wise, wise entity. They are the root of the universe. So they're really, they kind of know what's going on. They're feeling it and they're sharing it.
You know, you keep saying universe, but I think you mean solar system.
No, universe.
Okay.
The solar system.
Jamie, I was just wondering if you'd been to a science class in a while.
Well, I flunked the one in junior high, but other than that, no, I stay away from science. Just saying.
So Saul is very wise. What wisdom does Saul give Nicolas Cage and John Pig?
They would advise Nick and the pig to go home and just smile in the sunshine when you can and try to see the sun rays through the clouds.
So the movie ends with them looking up at the sun and knowing they were in the right place.
But we need a twist at the end, because these things always have twists. What happens when they get back to Earth? Okay. What's different about Earth?
I would say they come back and there's nothing but pigs and Nicolas Cage.
An entire world of pigs.
And just Nicolas Cage.
And just Nicolas Cage. So,
yeah.
Do the pigs run the government?
There's no government. It's just, you know, an oasis world with nothing but pigs and Nicolas Cage.
Okay. Fantastic. The world of Pig.
Oh, the world of Pig. I like it. The sequel.
We need to sell this movie to Hollywood so we can live high on the hog. Before we go, it's time to give our authors a chance to talk about what's new and exciting in their lives. Alice, what's going on?
Thank you, Megan. So I have started a production company called Cordell Productions, and under that production company, we are filming our first TV pilot called John Sunshine's Lost Rock and Roll Tapes in January in Portland. And this is an award-winning horror, dark comedy, thriller, rock mop that is set in 1976 and present day. We have gotten fantastic feedback. We're in pre-production. We're also accepting donations to offset some of the pre-production costs that we've already taken on. And we have a donation fundraiser page with all the information on Indiegogo. That's our first thing. And then I also have a experimental progressive metal rock band called Electric Alice with my partner, Richie Warboys, who is also Cordell Productions musical director. We have two songs out that's streaming on all the services. Lost, the theme song for the TV pilot. So we're really excited about that. We have about two or three other songs that we've written and that we're developing that will also be part of the TV series.
That's fantastic. Wait a minute. You're making a TV show, but you've already won awards. Which awards are those?
These are for the screenplay for the TV pilot.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, I understand now. I'm certain all of our listeners will understand now. You've won 14. The last time I talked to you, it was eight. Eight awards for your screenplay. Now it's 14. That is quite impressive.
Thank you. Our number 13 win was Best Horror Screenplay at the LA Sci-Fi and Horror Film Festival. So we were very honored to win. And then we've won semifinals at the Portland Screenplay Awards earlier this year as well. So being local to Portland and filming in Portland, our director is from Portland, our DP is from Portland. So we're really excited to be part of the Portland filming community, especially the horror community, which is fantastic here. So that's what we've got going on.
And you have a connection to one of our previous contestants, right? Luke Zwanziger? Yeah.
Yes, Luke is our director for John Sunshine's Lost Rock and Roll Tapes. And I just met with him to... Actually, this week, I think we've had 9 hours worth of meetings, checking out different film locations. Then we're going to be filming right in Northeast at a great place called Video is the Future. And we're just really excited to be into pre-production and all that other amazing fun stuff that goes along with creating stuff.
That is super exciting. And I wish you the best of luck with this. I can't wait to see the pilot and I can't wait to see you all succeed at this because it is super exciting.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
If people want to find you and any of the stuff that you're doing between Electric Alice or the TV show that you're shooting right now, where can they find you on the internet?
Mostly I am on Twitter as Alice N. Wells. We also have at John Sunshine TV and Cordell _PRODS. Those are our Twitter pages. We are also on Instagram under the same names for all the information about the TV pilot and to see the cast and the crew and get information about the story and donating. And we have amazing perks all the way up to like executive producer credits for, you know, different donation levels. And that is on the crowdfunding site Indiegogo. And you just search for John Sunshine's Lost Rock and Roll Tapes.
John Sunshine's Lost Rock and Roll Tapes. Fantastic. Good luck with everything. Jamie, what's going on in your world?
Well, I am writing a TV show with a friend that is called Travels Through Life. And it was an idea that I had many, 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 many years ago. And I got talking with my friend Erica, and I said, we should write something. And I said, how about a TV show? And told her the idea, and she loved it. And so that's what we're working on. And actually, on the same visit to LA, I also met up with a college friend of mine, and we're co-writing a film that will be my directorial debut. And that one is called The Silent Film, which is basically a film about a guy who wanted to get all of his friends from college theater department back together. And so he decides to make a movie. The main character is deaf. And so he wants to make this film from his point of view. So the audience doesn't hear any voices, any music, any special sound effects or anything. It's completely a 2-hour movie of silence, just watching the character. So I got that going for me.
That is amazing. And it would be quite a feat to pull it off. because that's, I mean, we talked about high concept before. This is true artisanal, artistic stuff. I would have no idea how to pull that off.
Right. And that's what they have to figure out, because going into it, there's a lot of fun to be had with that. An interesting journey for them to pull off. I can't tell you much more because it would wreck the movie for you.
Fascinating. You have to come back on the show when things get further along and tell us how things are going.
Definitely. Happy to.
Well, Jamie, if people want to get in contact with you, where can they find you online?
Twitter, capital MacSisak, MacSisak. And pretty much anywhere else through the internets, through my last name. And then on IMDb, it's just Jamie Ray MacSisak.
So which pitch deserves a place in the Word Crash Hall of Infamy? You tell us. Tweet us at Word Crash Game and vote for your favorite story of the night. Was it A Very Brady Alice in Wonderland? Or the soon-to-be classic Pig in Space? If you're listening on YouTube, remember to like and subscribe and get in those comments. Tell us how you would tackle our questions today. Everything we talked about will be in the links below. Thank you for listening. I'm Megan, and this has been Word Crash, reminding you to always get creative.